Welcome to the Mothball Prophecies. Accept no cheap imitations. I am your host, Jonathan. So, heard any good conspiracy theories lately? Remember, the quality of any conspiracy theory is rooted in the plausibility of the half-truth it's built upon, or the unwillingness of the believer to pierce the veil and figure out the motive behind the story. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about today. Sometime between Halloween and whatever disruptions have been happening in the news, I kind of lost track of which episode I was supposed to do. And I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed, because I do love a series that strives to create a grand unified conspiracy theory, and in this particular one, I really like how they normalize the use of hallucinogens in a ritual sense, which is kind of a preview of our next episode. Anyway, way back when, I told you all that when I reached episode 20, I would tell you all another tale of weird things I've experienced. Of course, this is episode 22, but who's counting? At least three of you, apparently, and I thank you for the reminders you sent. So, in keeping up with my declaration, I want to take you back to the late 80s, early 90s, to a very rural area in upstate New York, Cowtown, Washington Irving Country, Martin Van Burenville, okay? I spent a good portion of my teens on a once-thriving dairy farm that was turned into a veritable ghost town thanks to Reaganomics. Hundreds upon hundreds of acres of desolate cornfields separated by patches of woods, with an abandoned railroad track from 1938 running right through the middle. Not actual tracks, per se, just a straight line of stones and coal with those old green glass insulators tossed to either side. It certainly wasn't in use anymore. The patches of woods in themselves were very interesting, and there was a peat bog hidden in there as well, which has nothing to do with this story. The woods contained mostly white birch trees. Narrow, straight things with markings that looked like eyes where knots were beneath the bark. Those trees could be very disorienting. Because of how they were clustered along the hills, it was easy to walk through the woods and lose a sense of direction. Human sight being what it is, the trees would line up at points and just present a wall of birch bark, giving no indication of anything beyond them. The farm itself was supposedly a stop along the Underground Railroad, and it was impossible to look anywhere or overturn the rich topsoil without revealing knapped arrowheads. You know, because white folks were not the first inhabitants. There were stories of paranormal happenings in the area. There was the Kinderhook Blob, which was first sighted in the 1960s, most likely around the same time as the movie The Blob. There were haunted houses that would get new homeowners yearly because no one seemed to want to stick around for long. Possibly because of spectral occurrences, possibly because of faulty wiring and gas lines. The location of the Headless Horseman definitely, possibly, maybe, happened in the area. And, of course, being located in the northernmost part of the Hudson Valley, strange lights were fairly common. Yet, despite all those things favoring a belief in the paranormal, that's not really where my head was during that period. I was discovering my singing voice, messing around with a Yamaha keyboard, and learning the ins and outs of a 486 computer. I was reading, writing, and desperately seeking paths to get my ass out of Columbia County, safely or otherwise. But it was also during this time that I would go out into the woods for some mildly competitive activity. In this specific case, it was playing a game of war. Now, playing war in my family was not as aggressive as the occasional bout of "I wonder what this does," a game that involved taking various and usually rusty farm tools out of the garage and attacking one another, because we were civil. We also didn't have cable. War involved my father, my charming sibling, and myself hiking out into the woods, splitting up, and then trying to find one another. like a game of hide and seek, but everyone is moving. So we would set boundaries as to our area of play simply because a few hundred acres would make for a rather long and pointless game. But such is war. I was in my mid to late teens, and like most teenagers stuck in rural areas with nothing to do, I was angsty, depressed, and simply needed distraction, or an outlet. So this activity offered what I needed. Kind of. Not really. But it was a good substitute. It should be noted that there were a bunch of streams in the woods from the road. There were two streams to cross before reaching the derelict railroad tracks that I mentioned before. We crossed the first stream and saw some wood ducks bobbing around. After this, we split up. I decided to head back to the second stream, which only flowed during the early spring. At this time of year, however, the bed was dry, but the banks were high enough that I could use it as a shallow trench while still getting a clear view of the surrounding fields and even the low hills in the distance. I waited about half an hour, after which the hunt was on. I continued to walk along the stream bed and saw movement, so I figured I caught my first opponent of the day. I rushed in and stopped because what I saw was neither my father nor my charming sibling. This was a figure that was humanoid in shape and very tall. In retrospect, it may not have been very tall at all, but my perception may have distorted the height because my brain saw it as a threat, or at least something out of the ordinary. The figure was also gray and blurry. Not gray as in a pale extraterrestrial, but more like someone made a light charcoal pencil smudge in the shape of a large humanoid. The thing bounded across the stream bed without making a sound and then just vanished. It was light outside, so this wasn't a trick of the eyes. I also do not understand how there was no noise because I could hear leaves falling to the forest floor and deer walking hundreds of yards away. I stood still and then shook myself out of whatever the hell just happened and made my way along one of the well-worn tractor paths to an open space in one of the overgrown fields. An open space simply felt safer and offered me more options to run if necessary. Soon, my sibling and my father joined me. Almost at once, we asked, "Did you see it?" We then took different turns telling nearly the same story, but from different vantage points. Each person saw a large, blurry, gray figure move through the forest and then vanish. The problem in resolving each person's story came with how the being moved. Now, I've been trying to figure out how to convey this for a medium that relies 100% on audio, so I want to go through a little mental exercise with you. Imagine you're sitting across from me. If I pick up a pen and move it from right to left, you see the same pen moving from left to right. This is simply the way things work in our reality, and why independent observation matters. In the case of what I saw, each person reported that the creature moved in the same direction, as in, I saw the creature move from right to left. My father, who was low on a hill opposite me, also saw the creature move from right to left. My brother, who was farther up the stream bed than me by about 50 feet, but on the other side of the being, also saw the creature move from right to left. So, what was it that three people in different locations saw on that autumn day? I'm sure some people would be prone to saying it was a Bigfoot or Sasquatch of the Northeast or something like that. As a matter of fact, I'd like to put forth the following.
I admit some people have been seeing some pretty strange things lately. One of the strangest and most bizarre is the appearance of huge hairy creatures that walk upright on two legs and are frequently sighted in areas where UFO activity has been reported.
Somewhere in these dense forests, lurks something for whose origin and existence science can offer no earthly explanation. Called Sasquatch in Canada, Bigfoot in the Western states, Folk Monster in Arkansas, Momo in Missouri, Skunk Ape in the Florida Everglades, these foul-smelling giants, some of them reportedly 10 feet in height, crash around in the undergrowth, uproot trees, invade logging camps, and terrify witnesses. What are these creatures? Where do they come from? How did they get here? Recently, an astonishing number of Bigfoot reports have coincided with UFO sightings and landings. Are the UFOs dropping these creatures here to see if they can live on our Earth? And why has no one found any bones or the remains of one of them? Do these giants, as psychic Peter Hercus claims, decompose into powder when they die? Or are they perhaps picked up again by the UFOs to be examined in alien laboratories? Is the Bigfoot a cosmic mutation? Incredible as this notion may seem, we're contemplating even stranger possibilities in our own laboratories.
Now, apart from curating a pretty good sample for your next album, that clip from a 1970s documentary is trying to tie Bigfoot to other paranormal activity. Remember, where I lived had a number of strange things occurring, not the least of which was the esteemed Oliver North, a graduate from my high school. But what we saw that day was definitely not a Bigfoot. This was not hairy. It did not make any noise, and it certainly didn't have any detectable stench. But it was large, bipedal, and moving swiftly through the woods. It could have been an extraterrestrial, but there was no evidence of craft or other beings or what I would deem to be extraterrestrial activity. Synthesizing the experience through completely unrelated knowledge found in books I read a decade or so later, I would be more prone to say that the being, if we could call it that, was interdimensional. That would kind of resolve its motion and direction as observed from three separate vantage points. You know, Flatland, Hyperspace, The Elegant Universe, Rudy Rucker's Saucer Wisdom, and other books that made the rounds in the late 90s. Okay, maybe not Flatland, because that one has been around for a while, and it was more about Victorian society by way of theoretical physics. But still, those books raised the collective awareness about interdimensional travel and how objects would appear as they passed through different dimensions. And yes, Jacques Vallée certainly mentioned similar concepts in his work with J. Allen Hynek. A multidimensional object or being passing briefly through three-dimensional space might make sense. It's also possible that what we witnessed was an echo of a past event, distorted by time and our own senses, but I don't exactly subscribe to the stone tape theory that has been put forth as an explanation for recurring paranormal events, such as ghosts. In any case, what I saw never happened again. I frequented those woods all throughout my 20s and revisited that same spot at various times of the day and night, only to witness nothing out of the ordinary. Oh, I mean, I once fed some wild strawberries to a fawn that was passing through one of the fields, you know, until the mother snorted and conveyed that I was a potential threat, and that was an unusual and magical experience for me. But it also had very little to do with large gray interdimensional shamblers. To this very day, I have no idea what it was, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be telling you this story. You know, if any of you have some inkling as to what I encountered, or if you have had similar strange experiences that you'd like to share, send an email to mothball@crescentcitymedia.com. This has been another edition of Weird Things I May Have Experienced. I hope to have another one for you in the next 10 episodes or so. Now that I'm back on track, I can tell you I'm in the middle of doing research for our first December holiday episode. I'm going to attempt to scratch the surface on theories about the origins of the Christian Church and Santa Claus, none of which will involve Templars, Da Vinci, Blue Apples, or Henry Lincoln. Until then, sleep tight.